Dive into the deep, dark depths of the ocean, where a mysterious mammal moves like a submarine through the inky blackness. The Cuvier's beaked whale cruises beneath the waves, slipping silently through the abyss, with a breath hold that shames even the most stoic of Scandinavians. With a schnoz shaped like a beak, and a torpedo body built for slamming into British merchant vessels, it's the Houdini of the high seas, pulling off feats that leave other animals gasping for air. But sometimes, you have to go where no mammal's gone before to survive here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It's your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cassie for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cassie's music, please search Cassie Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And thank you to Johanna for the creation of this week's artwork. To check that out, you can visit us at our home on the web at ledaxonomy.com. And a very special thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. If you'd like to donate, just visit patreon.com/ledaxonomy or click on donate on our website.
And today we're talking about a sea creature that does not have a beak, but more on that later.
Not in the conventional sense. But people that named it certainly did think it had a beak.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about Cuvier's beaked whale.
Yeah.
Or Cuvier.
Oh, there's no way that's not Cuvier.
Cuvier's beaked whale.
Oh, Cuvier. It's very... like Lumiere. That's the same kind of IER. Yeah, Cuvier's beaked whale. It's also called the goose-beaked whale. So they're really leaning into this beak aspect. The short-beaked whale. And the Ziphius. That's fun. It makes it sound like
that's
an alien.
A wizard's name.
Oh, that is definitely one of Harry Potter's teachers. It ends with... it sounds like a... the weirdest gladiator.
Yeah.
It's like, this is Rubius, this is Albus and Severus, and then here's Ziphius. We don't really talk about him.
Yeah. Turns people into squirrel.
He's a little bit thick. But we're going to call it here the Cetaceous Stig Severinson. That works. Yeah. Which will become apparent later. And then Diver City.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just trying to think of things to put with like diving or diver. And I've already used the Holy Diver joke with another one. And then now I've just had Toby Mac stuck in my head for the last half of the day. So...
guy who discovered this was definitely a Cuvier. He was a French naturalist named Jean-Léopold Nicolas Frédéric Baron Cuvier.
Oh, man, yes.
Also known as Georges. What is it when the French pluralize George?
It's just George.
George Cuvier.
George's
Cuvier. Yeah. Cuvier.
Gorges. yep, that is French nobility. If I've ever heard it, just 30 or so names with a title, Baron, thrown in there, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes Daron. Referred to as the founding father of paleontology.
Oh, really? Huh. Did not know that. Well, we've got... then this would have worked well with the father of scuba diving, Jacques Cousteau, mm-hmm. who's French and a diver.
Yeah, and a father of a discipline.
Of a discipline, yes. I don't know if he actually had kids. I'm sure he did. But yeah. Do you have any science for us?
Do you want to know what science calls it?
Yeah.
It's in the kingdom you know, love, and are in, the kingdom Animalia. The phylum is Chordata. The class is Mammalia. The order is Artiodactyla, which means it is a hippopotamus. Or a cow. A bison. I don't think a hippopotamus, actually. They've got toes. More traditional toes.
How many toes? That's the question. Artiodactyla is even-toed ungulates.
That's true. So are we odd-toed? We're not ungulates. The suborder is Whippomorpha. Whippomorpha.
Nice.
The infraorder is Cetacea. The family is Ziphidae. The genus Ziphus. And the species Ziphus cavirostris.
Ziphius. Ziphius cavirostris.
Ziphius cavirostris. That's true.
Whippomorpha is a suborder that includes all cetaceans and hippopotamids.
Hippos. Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Hippopotamids.
This thing is a hippo.
It is a hippo. Or hippos or whales. One or the other. Hippos are just river whales.
Some of these things that are in this whippomorpha, whippomorphs, look like chupacabra. So,
yeah, kind of like a whippet and a gremlin. You know, your classic garden variety gremlin.
Yeah.
But yeah,
find in your backyard.
Yeah, the kind of gremlin you have to spray for these days. So, since we are in the business of naming things, it's time for my favorite part of the show and the listener's favorite part of the show, nitty-gritty nomenclature. Part of the show where I ask you, Joe, a question, and that is, what is the English translation for the binomial nomenclature, which in this case we've just mentioned is Ziphius cavirostris. What does it mean in English? Does it mean A, sword-like hollow beak, B, beak-nose crevice dweller, C, fast goose nose, or D, brave gray diver?
Brave gray diver, final answer.
That is incorrect. I thought for sure that I had to put nose in there because of rostrum being in there.
Yeah, I just went with the boring one because sometimes these things are disappointing.
Well, this is the opportunity to stretch your linguistic and etymological legs.
Mm-hmm.
Ziphius is sword or sword-like. It's Greek. It's an alternate spelling for the Greek word for sword. And cavirostris, cavity, it's hollow, and then rostrum being nose or beak area. So it has a sword-like hollow beak. It is about as on the nose as you can get.
Okay.
So it works.
It does work. It just works.
But you know what also works? Brave gray diver, because it is that as well. He's so brave. Such a brave boy. And he's a bit of a chubster. So tell us about what he looks like.
All right. Well, he has a robust cigar-shaped body, a short stubby beak, and nose, rostrum, and a slightly curved mouth resembling, resembling a goose's beak. But I disagree. Yeah, I can see goose if you squint. I can see goose beak, like that shape.
It's not a parrot beak. No, I'll tell you that.
The coloration varies from a dark gray to reddish brown, often with a lighter head and a white face on the front. And males often have scars or patches from social interactions.
So do I. And the scars remind us that the past is real.
A small dorsal fin set far back on a sloping forehead is a distinctive quality of this porpoise. Could be a beaked whale, actually. It's not a porpoise. It looks like a porpoise.
It does. It looks like a big... Yeah, porpoise. Not even dolphin. Just like that short, blunt face.
It has a single pair of throat grooves. Like, it's got a little bit of that. Actually, I don't know. The picture, I was going to say it has counter shading, but some of these pictures looks like it just like is a uniform color.
It doesn't really need counter shading given its habits.
And males have two small conical teeth at the tip of the lower jaw, which is hidden in females. So you get an underbite in males.
Adorable.
Now, that brings us to its size and dimensions. Welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment, the official listener's favorite part of the show. The part of the show that's introduced by you when you send in audio of yourself saying, singing, or chittering the words measure up into ldtaxonomy@gmail.com. Did I say? It's also the part of the show when we present the animal size and dimensions in relatable terms through a quiz that's fun for the whole family. We don't have any measure up intro this week, but that means we get to hear from an animal, and Carlos is bound by honor to guess what it is.
For honor.
Mm-hmm. Without further ado, the listener's favorite part of the show.
Don't forget me, okay?
Who does this child not want to forget him?
I don't know. I haven't seen this one.
You really don't think so?
I don't know. Oh, is it Free Willy?
It is Free Willy.
Okay. I've never seen Free Willy. So
really?
No, it's one of those cultural touchstones that pass me by.
Just a costly Willy for you.
No, yeah, it was an expensive... I'm not going to go there.
You should watch it.
Do you think it holds up?
I don't know. I haven't seen it since the 90s.
Yeah, I feel like if I told someone who hadn't seen Homeward Bound to watch it now, they would be disappointed.
Oh, I would watch Homeward... No, I think Homeward Bound is good. The ending, when Shadow comes over the hill, is good.
Don't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen this 35-year-old movie.
You just said you wouldn't direct people to watch it.
But I want to give them the choice to experience it if they want.
That's fair enough. All right. Let's talk about the length of this beaked monstro. They're about 23 feet or 7 meters. So long, but not like humpback long. How many objects fit into this thing, or vice versa? Which is correct? A 5.7 whale shark pectoral fins go into the length of a Cuvier beaked whale. B 65 of this whale go into the length of the USS Gerald R. Ford's anchor chain. Or C, 2.9 giant tube worms go into the length of the Cuvier's beaked whale.
2.9 giant tube worms?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's the tube worms. either the whale shark fin. So what's that, like 4 feet for the whale shark fin? Ish? That seems about right. I have no idea how long an anchor chain is. I mean, I imagine it has to be just ridiculously long.
It has to get to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, right? Because just in case you're over it.
Yes, I'm sure. We have to tow an entire cargo ship behind us just for the chain. It just holds like 30,000 feet of chain.
Yeah. Just in case. Just you want to anchor over the trench.
Just in case we have to anchor at the closest point to the Earth's core. I'm going to go with the fins, the whale shark fins.
Final answer?
Yes.
The correct answer was the worms. 2.9 giant tube worms.
I thought the tube worms were like 6 feet.
They're 8 feet.
God. Okay.
Long. The Gerald R. Ford chain is 1,400, and the whale shark pectoral is 4.9 feet.
1,400 feet?
1,440.
That seems low.
For the chain?
But I guess you don't really need to anchor when you're in the middle of the ocean, do you?
No. It's for when you're near other stuff.
Right, exactly.
So let's talk about the weight. They're about 6,600 pounds, 2,994 kilograms. How does this compare to this stuff? Is it A, 3?
You got to figure something out, a way to describe that.
There's no other way to say it.
Just say, how does this stuff measure up?
Yeah, but you have to choose one that's correct. Some of them is wrong.
Right, so it doesn't measure up.
How does it measure up? Is it A, 3 mola molas go into the weight of a Cuvier's beaked whale? B, 2 Cuvier's beaked whale go into the weight of the RMS Titanic's anchor? Or C, 4.3 humpback whale calves go into the weight of Cuvier's beaked whale.
There's just so much information I'm trying to process through. It wasn't the anchor last time, so it's the anchor this time. Final answer. It's the RMS Titanic's anchor. They're making a Titanic 2, not the movie. They're making another boat.
So, I've heard this since the 90s.
But this billionaire is doing it. He's making it happen.
Well, the correct answer is 3 mola mola.
Duh.
That's how big this fish is.
I forget how huge those fish are, yeah.
3 of them go into a whale.
This is not that big of a whale.
We had some trouble, but in the description... I said that the males have this underbite tooth that's hidden in females. It looks like a billy goat's like underbite. It's very funny. Whales should not have this.
It's adorable. My dog has an underbite. Whenever his mouth is closed, you just see it like his bottom row of teeth, and it's cute.
He looks like a dork. Do you want to know any fast facts before we get into the biggest fact of all time for this animal?
Yeah, I do.
Well, they prefer deep waters, up to 3,000 meters, and by up to, I mean down to, near continental slopes, sea mouths, or canyons, from tropical to temperate regions. They are rare to see due to their offshore habitats. And they only surface very briefly. They typically live solitary lives in small groups of 2 to 7 individuals, though larger aggregations can occur in productive feeding areas. So if there's fish or whatever, then they'll hang out. They're shy and often avoid boats. Me too. It's not true. I don't have anything.
Being shy and avoiding boats are true, but have totally different reasons behind each one.
Yeah, the boats is, well, unless both social interactions and boats make you sick to your stomach.
That's just compounding, though. Like my junior prom was on a, they rented out a yacht, and it was like, okay, so this is combining two things I don't like. Seasickness and social and formal social interactions.
No. Yeah, that would be I actually skipped my yacht prom. We had two.
You had two yacht proms.
No, we had two proms. I had two proms. Junior and senior.
I feel like the junior prom should just be called yacht prom.
Junior was the yacht prom, so yeah. Prom on a yacht. They have a unique sprint diving strategy. Am I talking about, can I talk about this?
No.
Okay. They don't have that. Unless they do. The scarring patterns on males are thought to result from competitive interactions, possibly over mates or territories. It's also possible that they're just scuffed up because you keep it in your pocket with your keys. I also saw that they get munched on by cookie cutter sharks. Seems rude.
That would be unpleasant.
Yeah. But it does look like you keep it in your pocket with your keys. Like, it looks like that kind of scuffed up.
It's something that you you pass down to generations, like a watch.
Yeah, it needs like a good bit of leather conditioner on the top.
But like almost every like, especially gray cetacean, just look at a manatee. It looks like it belongs in your pocket.
Manatees are boat stricken.
Oh, if you're just like round and gray, you're gonna be scuffed. Yeah, this is what you signed up for when you chose to be round and gray.
Things want to scrape you lightly. maybe they just get itchy and they find a nice sharp coral to.
And then they're like, "Ow, ow, ow, ow! I overdid it. Nope."
Yeah.
I'm gonna wear this scar for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Their global distribution and diving prowess makes them key species for studying deep ocean ecosystems. We gotta locate this bucktoothed dork and study him.
And call him a nerd in front of all of his friends.
His friends? He only has 2 to 7 of them.
Get him together.
Seven is a good amount. Do you have any biggest facts?
I do. This one is called... I actually don't have a name for this one. We'll call it Rolling in the Deep. Why not?
Adele.
Yes, my favorite computer from the early 2000s, Adele.
Dude, you're getting Adele tickets.
Okay, so the Cuvier's beak whale is the world champion holder for mammals holding their breath. At a whopping 3 hours and 42 minutes, it is the longest recorded dive of any mammal. Wow. So, a lot of, like, whales dive, and especially a lot of beaked whales dive. So this is just This is kind of broad for beaked whales in general, but the Cuvier's beaked whale has the current record holder. It has the current record, even though, like, again, they all dive down pretty deep, and we only monitor a select few. So I'm sure that others have gone down longer than this. But this is how they go about making this happen, spending 3 hours and 42 minutes at the bottom of the ocean. By the way, they can go down as far as almost 10,000 feet, 9,800 feet, which is about a third of the way down to the bottom of the Mariana Trench. no light, crushing pressure, and then they just hang out there for almost 4 hours. It seems insane for a mammal to do. So they do this. They have several physiological adaptations that allow them to do this. One is they have pretty high myoglobin levels in their muscles. This allows them to store oxygen for these extended dives and tap into that oxygen much longer than they otherwise would. Oh, by the way, they can hold their breath for a really long time, which is why I called this guy the cetaceous Stig Severinsen, who is no longer the record holder for holding his breath, but I did. I remember the first time I knew about, like, competitive breath holding was in some magazine at a dentist office, and this guy was the, like, Nat Geo record holder for 22 minutes. Which is just nuts. Stig Severinsen. Now it's somebody else who can hold it for longer, but still 22 minutes, which is exactly 1/10 of the record of this whale, who can hold his breath for 222 minutes. So even at peak human conditioning, they still got us beat. They can still 10x us. So anyway, they can store more oxygen in their muscles with their myoglobin levels, which allows them to tap into the oxygen when they need it. Their blood also carries more oxygen than most mammals. They have a higher red blood cell count. I am now fine to talk about blood on this show, thanks to that gecko salamander we talked about last time. Nothing could be worse than that.
Is your trauma exposure?
Yeah, it was trauma exposure therapy. I am now cured. Also, when they dive, they reduce their heart rate dramatically. This is a process called bradycardia, which also conserves oxygen. So they have more oxygen stores. Their blood can carry more oxygen to the brain and muscles when it needs to, and it also is using less. Because the heart rate is slowing. And it is suggested, so these guys aren't super well studied, especially when they dive down 10,000 feet, but the suggestion is that they are able to collapse their organs and even their rib cage. So their lungs collapse under the pressure. Because remember, at 10,000 feet, that is... I should have looked at what the atmospheres is. That is...
the atmospheres at 10,000 feet.
10,000 feet underwater. Is 303 atmospheres.
Oof.
300 and so the pressure you currently feel with the air around you, multiply that by 303, and that's what this whale is experiencing at the bottom of the ocean there. And so obviously that has an effect on you. Researchers' suggestion is that they flatten their rib cage, their heart, lungs, other organs. This minimizes nitrogen absorption and prevents decompression sickness, which is a huge problem, or a huge thing to consider if you are a diver, is nitrogen pockets forming in your bloodstream, and then at high pressure and then expanding as you go to lower pressure closer to the surface, causing the bends. And so, yeah, everything flattens, their heart rate slows, they have better blood than the rest of us, they have better muscles than the rest of us, they're just better than the rest of us. They're elite. This allows them to hunt the squid at 10,000 feet below sea level. It also gives them relatively low competition. There aren't, since other things that eat squid can't really go down that far. They kind of have the ocean to themselves. And it also helps them avoid predators like orcas. Because, man, orcas are nuts. I would do whatever I needed to do to get away from them. And if it meant crushing my lungs and rib cage to be at 10,000 feet in the pitch black so that I could eat some squid in peace, I'll take it.
That does seem painful.
They're probably used to it. It's probably like the Wolverine extending and retracting his claws. Like, it hurts every time, but it's like, it's worth it.
If you ask him, they'll be like, every time.
But yeah, this guy's superpower. And it does extend to many other species of beaked whale, but this is just the current record holder.
Wow. Feet. Imagine.
It would give you such a crick in the neck.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, you'd have to really just like hold your nose and brush feet? Out, blow out your nose.
Yeah, yeah. You got to do that once or twice on your descent. Yeah,
on your descent.
I'm super sensitive to pressure changes, especially underwater. So I would have every like 5 feet. I would have to do that. It would just take me forever. It takes so long to get down there. Like, oh, hang on. I have to do that in planes.
Oh, yeah?
Like, one time I fell asleep on the tarmac, and then we took off, and I woke up while we were cruising, and I had the worst headache. I felt like my eardrums were going to explode.
I had that when I was a kid, but I never... Never had it as an adult.
It's another one of those things I should have outgrown, like car sickness and acne, but I never did.
Yeah. It's food preservatives.
Yeah, it's high fructose corn syrup for sure.
Yeah.
But I've actually been off high fructose corn syrup for like the last several years, so, and I haven't been on a plane in several years, so... Maybe it's time to
That's
give it a try.
That's off-putting.
Off literal pudding?
Yeah.
I don't like pudding. I don't know why.
Pudding's anyway, good.
I wish I liked it because it's a relatively low-calorie treat. And Bibby loves pudding. But
Cuba Pudding Jr.
We're off the rails here. All right. You got anything else on the Cuvier's beaked whale?
That's all.
All right. So for you out there in podcast, yeah, that was the Cuvier's beaked whale. Make the world your oyster. Dive down deep into the depths and hold your breath for 222 minutes to snack on some sumptuous cephalopods in peace, like the Cuvier's beaked whale here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Hey Taxonomy Titans, I just want to remind you that we have a Patreon that you can find by going to ldtaxonomy.com/donate. All of our episodes are uploaded there. Sign up for free to engage with us, leave episode suggestions, or chat with other animal enthusiasts. If you find it in your heart to donate, it will help us cover some costs and continue to make the show. Plus, we'll thank you every week. Most importantly, thank you all for listening.
What? American Taxonomy is my favorite in the world podcast.
Cuvier seems like a chocolate.
It does sound delicious. Cuvier's truffles.